Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we proudly welcome Jimmy Hewitt, a guitarist and professor of music at Long Beach State College, to talk about the Angelico guitars. We'll be talking about the history and the legendary luthier John DeAngelico to modern-day DeAngelico guitars. Jimmy is joining us in studio to play some of these beautiful instruments. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Zill Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We got a great show tonight. Some of the most beautiful guitars I've ever seen are in the studio. We got four of the DeAngelicos in here. Scott, how are you doing? How's everything over there in the Midwest? Are you freezing or did it warm up?
It's warmed up. It's good. We're doing good. Just been spending a lot of time getting things arranged, getting the guitars back in a place where I can play some of them. Can't all have them all in one place, but been breaking out a few of them and been even showing my niece a little thing or two since she's around.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Well, hopefully soon, once you get settled, we'll be getting some more videos from you.
Yeah, I just got the computer up and running on last Thursday, so we should start to see something here maybe even by the end of this week. So,
okay. All right, well, listen, let's go ahead to commercial break, and then when we get back, we'll have Jimmy on, and we'll get into DeAngelico Guitars. We'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at Sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at Sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
Hey, this is Brent Mason with Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. It's late. Thanks, guys.
And we are back, and I want to welcome to the show Jimmy Hewitt. Jimmy, it's just a pleasure to have you here. It's great. And let's just get right into it. We don't have a lot. It's going to fly by real fast. Let's get into a little bit of the history of DeAngelico and give us a little overview of what happened, because for a while they kind of disappeared, at least from what I remember. I remember the guitars were collectible, but at the time when I was a kid, they weren't around too much. There wasn't too many of them. Mm-hmm. So could you kind of go through a little bit of the history?
Well, sure. John DeAngelico was part of an Italian first-generation immigrant family from Italy, and They were burrowed in the east side of New York. John, born in 1905, started the guitar line in 1932. Mm-hmm. But he was apprenticing at 9 years old with his uncle as a violin maker. Mm-hmm. And that's where he, you know, that's where he honed his craft, so to speak, and then started to get into building arch tops. And in 1932, that christened for him, and he got started. Never really built more than probably 30 guitars a year. I think in his heyday he may have hit 35, 36, 37 guitars, and quickly became known as the quintessential archtop maker in the world. Mm-hmm. Huge reputation, and a lot of you know, great players behind that: Chuck Wayne, Johnny Smith, Mel Bay, even. You'll see him playing a D'Angelico on the cover of his instructional books that probably all of us had peeked at one point. Remember,
yes, the Mel Bay method.
So, John was just a very, very dedicated craftsman. Everything hand-built, you know, obviously very choice woods, and he took it to another level. You know, you had Lore back in the 20s building for Gibson and starting that whole thing with Gibson and the archtops. But his bracings and such like that, and his neck joints and choice of woods and everything were just absolutely
beautiful. Well, I remember, like, I read on the site that he was actually, people were trying to get him to join, you know, come and join. Like, Gretsch was approaching him and stuff. But his philosophy was he just wanted to make his guitars his way. And
His way, and absolutely with, you know, top shelf standards and quality that only he approved. And he could not make compromises, and did not want to dilute his craftsmanship in any way, shape, or form into any kind of a production model guitar, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. So, Jimmy, where did he learn? Where did he first learn?
From his uncle. He started apprenticing at nine years old as a violin maker. And, you know, obviously violins have some transferable luthier skills and craftsmanship, having a sort of an arch top themselves, and you know, he was hand carving violins at a young age.
And then what happened after that? There was another guy that came in that started apprenticing with him, Jimmy Acquisto.
First guy was DeSerio, Jimmy DeSerio, and that was approximately from 1932 to 1959. And then Jimmy DeAcquisto, a little more of a household name in the jazz guitar world, who worked for him for the last few years of his life, from approximately late 50s till his death in 1964.
Oh, okay.
John DeAngelico's death. And DeAcquisto continued the company for a while, and then obviously started, as you know, many of you know, he started his own line, DeAcquisto Guitars, but definitely with an homage to John DeAngelico.
But what after when he set up the DeAcquisto setup, what happened to DeAngelico? Who owned it? Did the family still own it?
Well, right up until he suffered. His health started suffering in 59, John DeAngelico's, and after a few heart attacks and a bout with pneumonia and just this bitter cold 64 winter in New York, it was all he had. You know, and that day he passed in 64 at the ripe young age of 59.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I mean, after DeAcquisto had it for a while and he set up his own line, what happened? Who owned DeAngelico?
Well, then it actually did just fade out, and the company did die. It came back in a coincidental circumstance in approximately 2011 exactly. Yeah. They did at the Metropolitan, they did a tribute to his his craftsmanship and the greatness of his work. And at the same time, the Cohen family, known for Arizona Iced Tea and the patriarch of the family, a jazz guitar enthusiast, and you know, very much so a fan of D'Angelico, bought the rights to the company, and they revived the company. They had the financial horsepower to do that, and now it is a privately held company with the Cohen family leading the charge and a very carefully handpicked staff working with them.
So, Jimmy, can you tell us, like, some of those original guitars from the 30s and 40s, I mean, what would be their value today?
You're talking, that's a good question for Norman down the street, isn't it?
Norman's guitars.
I remember having an original, I'll give you a story here on D'Angelico. I had the ability to purchase a non-cutaway 42, I think it was. New Yorker from a guitarist from New York, relocated to L.A. by the name of Chuck Rossetti. And the guitar was built for him as a present from his brother. Now, a lot of these were all one-offs, right, for the most part. They were custom built, every single instrument, and many of them were commissioned for private individuals. And Chuck was a very fine guitarist, was based in the L.A. studios here for a while and out here in L.A. And I remember picking that guitar up, and engraved in the 24th fret was his brother's nickname, Buddy. And so I take this guitar that I really didn't have a use for it. I was a working guitarist in the 80s, playing Strats mainly and supporting a wife and three kids. So I didn't have a whole lot of use for a non-cutaway D'Angelico. And Chuck was done with the guitar, and I picked it up at a decent price. And he didn't care if I sold it or not. I take it up to Norman's Rare Guitars, and this was in 1980. Mm-hmm. Norman purchased that guitar from me for $5,000. And I think I was into the guitar. I think I doubled my money or something like that. Now, that guitar has got to command 50 to 100, somewhere in that range. But the primo, like New Yorkers with the cutaway, the more sought after New Yorkers and such, you're talking anywhere from $250,000 to $1 million.
Wow. Really, that much? Yeah.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, there's just not a lot of them. I know that they're very, very rare.
Well, he only made, he made just over 1,000 guitars total. And, obviously, some of these get damaged over time, lost, busted up, what have you, accidentally, and obviously. But these things are you're probably down to a few hundred D'Angelicos that even exist. So with the supply severely cut down over time, as well as the whole concept of they're not coming back, you've got a pretty high price tag.
Now, what you've seen of the old, you've played a few of the old guitars. Let's compare it to the new guitars. How are the new guitars? Are they pretty close? Are they?
I'm like blown away. I really am. I have collected. I've been a player all my life and a collector second. Most guitars I've ever purchased, in terms of vintage guitars, have always been players' pieces. In other words, they play well and they sound good, and. In running through that the whole vintage concept of buying and finding vintage guitars, I have several times played vintage guitars that were just not that good, and where I buy name makers and such. I can't say that's the case for D'Angelico. I have not played a bad D'Angelico. I've probably only played, I don't know, maybe 10 of these things in terms of the vintage instruments. But of what I've played and what I could compare to, the new stuff is absolutely fantastic. The wood in these instruments is choice. It's beautiful. The Sitka, there might be Sitka, but the spruce, the maple, ebony on the fingerboards, a rosewood tailpiece on the carved tailpieces, but it's a laminate top. Okay, these guitars, their American series or their standard series is a Korean originated instrument And I was, you know, talking to Jeff before the show a little bit about this. My opinion is they're just absolutely fantastic pieces. The wood is beautiful. It shouldn't surprise anybody that, you know, there's maple and there's beautiful spruce and ebony outside the United States, and that there's great craftsmen in other countries that have learned a lot from D'Angelico himself, you know, and patterned. They take these things, and from what I understand, you do essentially an MRI imaging of these of the old instruments. They, mm-hmm. they'll pick a great one and they'll MRI the thing and cut it in terms of any kind of a computer blueprint right down to the nano inch of inches, and you've got from there an American bench that does the tuning up of these things and any kind of little fine guitar work, so to speak, on an American bench. And then you do have now an American-made series, and those things are going for a minimum of $10,000.
Right.
Yeah, these Korean instruments are somewhere between $1,000 and, let's call it, $2,500. Mm-hmm. There was, for a moment, a Japanese effort as well that was really good, but it was short-lived. And those guitars, I've only played a couple, were really, really nice as well. But they've done a good job of outsourcing overseas, and compared to the old ones, shoot, I'm finding them extremely playable and sounding great.
Well, I was taking a look at them before the show, and the craftsmanship is just astounding. The quality control is—it's obvious that they're really monitoring what's coming out of Korea. So, but you were saying that the craftsmanship in Korea—they're very—they take a lot of pride in what they're doing, and they're really trying to make killer instruments, right?
Absolutely. Though, I mean, the mantra in Korea—not that I'm an expert of the Korean culture by any means—but the mantra is the best of the best. I mean, they're very, very committed and dedicated type 4 personalities or something to being number one in the world. I mean, you look at Kia, you look at Samsung. These are Korean companies with big time Korean agendas behind them. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of pride about what they're doing. You know, you start looking, you start comparing these things to boutique instruments, and I've played plenty of boutique instruments 3, 4, 5, 6 times the amount of money that either don't compare or these will run with. You know, you could make an argument that maybe a fret needed to be topped off just a little bit, but I've played every one of these just come right out of the case, shipped to me, and I've had nothing done to them in terms of setup work. So and used them on a lot of live work and a lot of session work.
Now, are they making their own pickups, or do they?
No. So Kent Armstrong is their pickup maker, and so I take this. I take these Kent Armstrong pickups, the first one I ever got, to my bench guy, and down at the old World of Strings in Long Beach. I'm a Long Beach guy, and Greg Coates, one of the longtime bench repair guys at World of Strings, almost 20 years there, takes the pickup apart, and he goes, fantastic, man. These things are they're built pretty well, and they're wound well, blah blah blah, and et cetera, et cetera, and no issue. And because I was like, these things sound pretty good. What's the rub on these things? You know, I'm like a bit of a tone neurotic type, like any other guitar player. I suffer mm-hmm. from tone neurosis, and I'm always looking for, you know, some kind of great sound or better sound, or you know, that's a fleeting thing in itself. But I was like, hey, wait a minute, these things sound pretty damn good, you know. So I was like, that was my first run through with Ken Armstrong pickups, and since then they've held up in pro work for me. They deliver. Could you make an argument that you want some more boost or something hotter or this and that? Yeah, you know, replace a pickup if you need to. I mean, I remember Dickie Betts saying years ago about his gold top, his 57 gold top. I'll never forget that story. His pickup went out, and you can hear that on countless Allman Brother recordings. He said the pickup, lead pickup went out, neck pickup went out, or which one. And they waltzed into, him and his guitar repairman waltzed into the local music store, and they put an off-the-shelf, I think, Gibson humbucker in the guitar off of a local music store, and the damn thing sounded just as good. So you can hear that interview, by the way, that Dickie does on YouTube in regards to his gold top, and he said the sound was in the wood. The sound was in the way the instrument was made. And the pickup, I mean, verbatim, his mouth to the mic that I'm speaking on, the pickup did not make a difference in that guitar. So a lot can be said for, you know, the wood and obviously the craftsmanship of the guitar. And if you need to do something, experiment with a pickup. I mean, I wouldn't say D'Angelico's standard series would be the first one to have a pickup change, but I don't see a need to do it. I really don't. It would depend. I bump into the shredding and the metal crowd once in a while, and you know they're looking for high gain and great output, and you could say that, you know, these aren't big hair guitars, I guess.
Well, it's going to be interesting because we have four models here. And they, as a jazz sound, and we're going to have you play more of like a jazz type of feel, because that's really what they were made for. Though the one that's the solid body does make a good rock guitar.
Yeah.
But we have four of them, and I want to ask you, because from when you were warming up before the show and tuning the guitars, they all sounded pretty close. I mean, the hollow body has a different pickup. It's a smaller type of humbucker, and it's mounted on the pick guard, like the John, is I think like a Gibson Johnny Smith or something like that.
Yeah, it's a floating mini humbucker.
Yeah, so that's definitely a different sound. The other ones all have like the similar pickups. But let's just go through a little bit of the different models and what's different about. I mean, obviously the big jazz guitar is a big jazz guitar, but these other, you got two semi hollows. Do these have a block of wood in the center? Like a
You know, your first question with semi hollow bodies is well taken. This has the first one. I'm going to like just demonstrate it for a bit here. Has a you know, a trapeze bridge, right? It's not even a stud tailpiece, and it's just a block of wood that goes under the actual bridge, right, and the lead pickup. It's not a center block, and I have to take a look at the stud tail piece that I brought in, which is another 335 type of model, right, semi hollow body type of model.
Right. So he has one of the semi hollows with this trapeze.
The tailpiece.
And then the other one has the stop tailpiece.
Right.
But the block of wood is just around by the bridge. There is no wood all the way through. It's not like a 335 where it goes from the neck down.
No. So, and you know, the first thing you're thinking, guitarists might be thinking with that is, uh-oh, feedback issues, blah, 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 at any kind of reasonable volume. Really untrue. I've used this in, venues that are seating 100 people, I'd say 75 to 100 for sure, and playing at a volume level that accommodates that room, and not a problem with feedback, actually, this exact guitar.
Let's take a listen to this guitar.
So here's the rhythm pickup. And I'm, mind you, I'm playing through a 6-inch Behringer PA monitor. Okay, so this isn't even a guitar amp, but a reasonable, clean reproduction. Yeah. So there you go. So there.
Do you have the tone knob turned back a little bit? Or?
Nope, I got all that on. So let's go to the middle pickup.
That's both pickups.
I mean, middle position.
Jimmy was mentioning that he was using this guitar with, and he was demoing with the treble pickup. He used it for a country gig. And it has that kind
of
style.
Yeah, I'll demonstrate that off. I usually, I'll use the solid body for that more than anything. But you can, you know, you can get a.
But it's a nice sound. The treble pickup, it's not too strident, but it's like a nice. It's got a nice meaty sound, but it does its thing.
So, Jimmy, how would you describe the necks on these guitars?
You know, it's a it's right between a D and a C. I guess you might say I'm starting to talk. my girlfriend's here. She's going, "What are you talking about bras for, man?" It's a D cup, right between a D cup and a C cup. Now, it's not too shallow of a neck, and it's not too much of the baseball bat kind of thing. They've got this thing right in the middle, and it's got a nice wide fingerboard. The ebony is nice. I like the what you can get out of that in terms of hard wood, but it's just a right in betweener kind of shape on the neck, Scott.
I think playing your guitars, it's like a 60s. It feels like a 60s, like a 335. It's that kind of.
Yeah. You know, in 60, the 335 neck was built more shallow, right? I used to own a 60 dot neck, and as opposed to the 59s or the 58s, which were much more D-ish and baseball bat like necks. I can work with both. I remember my 60 dot neck, I eventually got rid of it. It was a player's piece, vintage instrument, good sounding thing. I was needing to play strats. In the 80s, everybody had to play a strat, it seemed. You know how that was. If you guys are that age, of that vintage.
Oh, my heart is breaking hearing this. But.
Yeah. So anyways, the 60 dot was the year that shallow neck for Gibson started off, and that thing was just too thin, and it was supposedly a shaped like that for speed and something different. It was just too thin. So this thing is these things are fatter than that, but not baseball bat. Like, they're very comfortable. They're cool. They're good.
It's a nice neck. It's very playable. What model is this one?
So these semi hollow bodies are the EXSSs. EXSS. And these particular ones I have the split block inlays. I've always been a fan of that split block. They look good. You know, and D'Angelico's great with appointments, right? They've got the stair step tailpiece on this thing, and of course the Empire State Building.
The Art Deco type of design is beautiful.
Yeah, it's all Art Deco.
Now, the stop tailpiece is also an EXSS.
Yes, that's the other version. You know, I can pick that up, and we can mess around with that for a minute if you'd like.
Okay, we can. Go ahead.
Whenever you want to shift gears, you tell me.
No, but since we're going to it now, we can hear the difference. Now, the difference, the same model, you can get it either with the trapeze or with the stop tailpiece. And this guitar, same thing, is the block just under where the bridge and the tailpiece are, or is it much longer, or is it a little different than that?
Just to be perfectly honest, let's see.
He's looking
this
inside.
This has a block, yes, down the bridge, just like the other one, but it does have a center block as well, so let's see.
So it's going down the whole guitar.
Yeah, and again, this is... That's the so there's the neck pickup, middle position. Lead pickup. So obviously with the stud tailpiece, you're going to probably get a little bit more sustain, and with the center block in here, you'll probably have less feedback.
It sounds to me if you're gonna want to play a little more distorted and blown out, this might be the better guitar.
Yeah, and I can stomp that up, and you can. Tribute to Larry.
Hey. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, Jimmy, I was just wondering, how was the tops made? Are they solid maple, or are they kind of
ply? The maple ones are solid. They're book matched. The spruce is a laminated spruce. So these semi-hollow bodies are highly figured maple back and sides and the top.
Did they in the original guitars when John was building them, were they always solid did he laminate?
1,000% solid and one piece or occasionally a two piece top, but solid and hand carved all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are a production model guitar. So with,
but it's pretty. I mean, there is a difference with the stop tail piece, and obviously with that block of wood all the way through.
Yeah.
But it's pretty close. I mean, the sound of the guitar so far, the way it's sounding, and you know, taking into account every pickup is not exactly the same. It's pretty close. It's pretty consistent. But that's their sound. That's really what.
Yeah, and the semi-hollow bodies, as we all know, are a little more versatile. They're not as jazz-focused, jazz-centric as the jazz model I brought in here.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all kinds of things with these. You know, all kinds of. Yeah, I could take this to all kinds of different gigs, and of course, if you're a working guitarist doing casuals or something like that, great consideration.
Now, this one that we have in studio, this one's a single cutaway, and they were showing over at NAMM, they were showing a double cut. It looked like a 355 type of guitar.
I don't have one of those. Another semi-hollow body model. I'm mostly a fan of the single cutaways.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have a. Maybe I should get one of those. Actually, they're great. There's nothing about it that's not worth considering and jumping on. But I'm just working with single cutaways. I get everything I need to get done, I think, in terms of range on the neck and such with the single cutaway.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the solid body now.
Sure.
Which is kind of like it's a single cutaway. It's kind of like a Les Paul like type of style. And now this thing's all solid, so we'll hear the difference with just a solid body as opposed to these hollow. But it's a carved top. The craftsmanship's the same. Is that a mahogany back, or do we know what that is?
Yeah, these again are maple tops with a solid mahogany body, and middle position. First lead pickup.
Now this is a stop tail piece, everybody. He's using a stop.
Anyways, yeah, and this is a chambered body, by the way. They do make a solid buddy. This does have a couple of cavities in it.
What's the model number of this one?
This is the NYSD, is in D'Angelico.
Chamber body, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... And a nice lightweight, not overly heavy. It's not the Les Paul weight kind of thing.
Now, this was the guitar you were saying that you were using for the country thing.
Yeah, I can get through this on a country gig. Although I am honestly playing some tellies on some of this country stuff. But yeah, this will work really well, and I do use it.
He had just a side thing. He brought his pedal board in here. He's going to show you this Harmony thing. That's really
yeah,
cool.
So I'm just using, what is this thing? It's just a Digitech Harmony, man. I think I'm running, in thirds here or something. But... How about that? Something like that. So, yeah, I'm doing...
It's a great sound.
I'm just doing the... I get a little bit of a pedal steel effect that way, kind of a 6/9 kind of sound from that. And, yeah, this guitar will work great on a gig like that. This is all lead pickup, so I'll be like...
Yeah, it has that kind of a steel seal sound to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lead pickup. So, and then you can bounce over to.
I mean, it jazz still pick. Gets a nice warm jazz sound, even though it's a solid body.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's the rhythm pickup. Yeah. Yeah, cool.
It's very cool. And this is the New York series. So this is American made, right?
No, this is still standard series. So you can pick these solid bodies up for anywhere from like. $900 to maybe $1,100, you know?
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not a bad... I mean, it's a lot cheaper than Les Paul.
There isn't a guitar that I brought. I don't think you'd have to pay more than $1,200 for.
Even the jazz guitar?
Yeah, those things, you'll see them out at... you might have to bump to $1,300, $1,400, but I think you can... the jazz guitar you can pick up for $1,200.
Wow.
And you got to admit, I mean, Jeff, looking at that, and you look at the craftsmanship of that and how well that...
It's beautiful. I'll plug Scott, that in a minute. It's really beautiful.
I mean, they're really, really doing a great job with low to mid price points and guitars that sound good and play well. And, you know, I'm a looks guy last, but maybe I should have thought more about that in my career. You know, a presentation is often everything before you even...
Well, I mean, the Gibson jazz guitars were really expensive even back in the old day, even though today, monetarily, $2,000 or $3,000 wasn't a lot. But back then, that was a lot of money. What's the model number of the jazz guitar?
That's the EXL-1. EXL-1, yeah. So it's modeled after an Excel, which was a model that came out in the 40s with John. Actually, more like the 50s. These XL styled guitars came out with New Yorker features. So you're going to get the Klussen tuners and either split block or solid block inlays and spruce top. Even though the top beautiful. Is laminated, nice piece.
That's spruce. The EXL one is a spruce top.
Yeah, that's a spruce top. These others are maple tops, and then nice, beautiful figured maple on the sides and back. It's good. It's good wood.
I mean, all these guitars have triple binding and at least double binding around the headstock, and it has that famous D'Angelico inlay, and the way the headstock, it has that little like hook in it.
Yeah.
And they're using the really nice tuning keys too.
So in this, you know, in this price category, Scott, you're remote on maybe, you know, getting a good look at these things, but in this price category, who's up against these folks? Ibanez has got something out there running in this price range. I believe Yamaha does too. You know, obviously the two big boys, and then you get into stuff like, you know, the Godins or Godin, however you pronounce it, and maybe even a Washburn or the Arias and such like that. I've played all that stuff, and I would say this, that D'Angelico absolutely stands tall in that crowd, if not above.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to be very consistent. You have four here, and you've played more. Are you finding them pretty much this? You know,
yeah,
you can pretty much pick up anything.
All of them good. That they're whatever QC they're going through on the American bench after they come back from Korea. I think that, again, the Koreans are very, very dedicated to, you know, their work. So that I don't know exactly how much fine tuning is going on down on the American bench, but when these things come. When they've come to me, I've had to do zero setup work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given you're a light or a heavier player, I'm a little bit of a heavier player. I don't like action right on the fingerboard kind of thing. I think plus you're giving up some, one of our favorite subjects on the show, tone, right? The lower the strings are, you're going to sacrifice tone. So, but I like this. I don't like this action high. This is all very, very playable stuff. And
They're not. Playing your guitars, they're not that high. And for me, I mean, it's pretty comfortable all the way around.
Yeah, they have a consistency, no doubt, Jeff.
Well, let's take a listen to the jazz one.
Sure. Yep.
And now, so here's this. This is the guitar, the EXL one. What he was saying about maybe $1,200 to $1,400, depending.
Yeah, they. You know, here, you know, retail on these things is, I think, 16 to 1800, something to that effect. But your street price is $1,200.
I mean, you know, and $1,200 for a jazz guitar.
I mean, look at this thing.
While you're doing that, let me take a picture of that.
Yeah.
So I can post it so people can actually see the wood.
Sure.
Is the bridge, is that a floating bridge or has it got pins?
No, it's a floating bridge, and that is just a dark rosewood, Scott. But the fingerboards, I got to admit, I mean, all their fingerboards are ebony, and that's a. Here we go.
Now there's just one pickup on this. Now the high end that you're hearing, he's actually playing near the microphone, his voice mic. I'm gonna shut his mic off for a second. So now you're hearing the amp. It's got that sound.
So, Jimmy, question for you, and I apologize for those folks out there that are more familiar with the Angelico than I am. I have never played one, but the little metal piece that sticks up between the middle of the headstock, right above the D'Angelico, is that the truss rod, or is that just an ornate piece?
That is an ornate piece. Now,
no, there's a truss rod cover.
You're going to be deceived because there is a truss rod cover on these things that is shaped like the Empire State Building, right? The Art Deco State Building, but that's a that is a cosmetic.
Yeah,
the accoutrement.
If you saw the guitar here, you'd see the headstock angles down like a Gibson, and it would be bent too much for the truss rod. It's too much at an angle.
Yeah, I've only seen pictures of these, and I always wondered if that was the truss rod.
No, it's not flat. It's not flat up. It bends back a little bit.
Yeah. So you can obviously do all your.
Here, let me turn your. That's the little humbucker. It's a smaller humbucker than the other ones, and he put fresh strings on here. That's why it's so the overtones are really. It's really.
Yeah, you're going to hear some crisp overtones. I strung all these up this afternoon, so they haven't been played on. So we might even be wandering around a little bit in terms of pitch. But yeah, I like to demonstrate the stuff that you're going to probably end up gigging on, right? Right.
You know, right.
You're probably going to get Ipanema called on a gig.
Now, you notice that I'm muting his voice mic when he's playing. That's why it gets bright and goes down.
In and out for me, so I don't. Sometimes I'm not hearing it.
But the thing is listen. Now, I'm going to leave the mic on for a minute, but that's how loud the guitar is acoustically. You know, and before pickups, those guitars were used to cut through rhythm-wise, so it's loud even as a straight acoustic guitar. It's a pretty live guitar.
Yeah, nice little thing. And this is, I just got this 2 days ago, so it hasn't had any playing on it.
It looks beautiful.
This is, the cool thing about this, Scott, is, you know, I'm not pulling any punches. I didn't take this by, you know, Norik Renson's shop here in town or, you know, over to Carruthers, or I didn't run this by a great bench repairman like a Jim Foote or something like that and give it a skewed version of what's coming to me. This is straight out of the box with zero work, you know. So
it was so new. He pulled off the little the clear cover that was over the pickup. He literally just took that off before the show.
Yeah.
So the gold is just—it's virgin. It's never been scratched.
All these guitars at that price point, do they come with hard shell cases?
Yeah, they all come with hard shell cases. So, yeah, a damn good bargain, really. You know, they're all pro quality, pro player pieces. You have no issue at all putting one of these in the car and using it in a professional situation.
That's a great price for a jazz guitar. That's killer. Now, we're almost out of time. As I told you, it'd go by real fast. What I want to cover real quick is soulguitarist.com.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so soulguitarist.com, exciting. I've been working on this, concept for 2-3 years. And you can see the site. It's meant as, and will be functioning more and more, and when I say more and more, hopefully virally, that's the concept, as a profit-sharing site for musicians. I'm going to have a video contest of the month that wins a cash prize, and then that's going to break out into genres, country, rock, blues, jazz, R&B. And there will be cash prizes for the top 2-minute video in each one of those genres, voted on by the community. I hope to empower a lot of guitarists out there. There's a whole bunch of people that put on a shirt and tie in the day to go to a corporate gig, maybe, or may even put on some kind of a, you know, mechanics uniform that can play the hell out of the guitar, you know. And so you're going to see some people coming out of the woodwork for this. As well as it's a free lesson site, so I try to make that, you know, quality free lesson. There's beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels, all styles, and I keep it short and simple. Howard Roberts, you know, he was our guru at GIT, and you know, he taught, you know, 10-15 minute attention spans are.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, this is a pretty innovative thing as in terms of an educational place to go, because the lessons are free. Now, private lessons?
I offer private lessons, too. You know, that's $100 a session. Usually those sessions last two and a half hours if you want to work on something specific. But it's a donation site. Very cool concept. Les Weiss gave me that idea. And I'm sure all of you at the Flow Show know who Les is, one of the great human beings on the planet, and responsible for me connecting with you guys here at the show. The donation site is just pure fairness. I mean, if you get something out of it, you cough up a couple of bucks to a connected PayPal account, and don't matter if it's a buck or 10 bucks or more. So there's that as a revenue stream. And then there will be some advertising, and there's also going to be a used gear platform. There's a wholesale direct to Sam Ash. And those are some of the revenue streams. With that said, everything that I make almost entirely in terms of revenue will be given back to the community. I need money to run the site. I do have a webmaster on the site. There's some, you know, there's some expenses to doing business, but as it becomes more and more of a revenue based site, I'm just going to give more money away. And eventually, I'd like to see a gender sort of competition. I'm interested in music schools, University of Miami's best versus Berkeley versus USC versus, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then a corporate thing. I mean, how fun would that be in corporate culture? There's all kinds of subcultures in corporate culture to have the best guitarist at Apple going up against the best guitarist at Qualcomm or whatever. You know, it's all, you know, it's meant in fun too.
Yeah, maybe we can get the best guitarist from Sweetwater against Guitar Center against and really have a battle between
there
the guitar
go.
Stores.
There you go. Just a little
there's so
little,
many players.
A little entertainment. There's a lot of players out there, but it's meant to also discover players and to share the dough. I mean, I'm not interested in, you know, making money off of fellow artists. I've got that site set up to empower people.
So go to soulguitarist.com and check it out. There's a lot of videos. It's free. You can learn a lot
more
of cool
coming.
Stuff.
More coming. All the time.
You'll see a lot of Jimmy there doing some of the stuff and playing some of the things that we showed here. He has lessons, and he plays some different songs and talks about the songs. He's got a Hall of Fame. He talks about some amazing players in there. It's really very, very, very cool. And then also, too, the site for the guitars is d'angelicoguitars.com. Check out. You'll see all the different ones there. And the price point is just killer. So I want to thank you. We ran out of time. We'll definitely have you back because there's a lot of stuff we got to cover.
Thanks, guys.
And just your playing is killer anyway. So
thanks, guys.
Scott, anything up? Do I need anything you want to say? Any news? Anything coming up that you want to before we go?
No, just want to definitely thank our sponsor, Sweetwater.
Yes, definitely. And Jimmy is going to take us out, play a little jazz piece on. And everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next week. Thank you.